and they're saying, hey, you know, can you introduce us to this guy over here? And, you know, we want to get into the cryogenic business. And my dad said, you should really talk to my son and his friends. And within a week, we're in Belmont and we're funded. It was just the craziest. And so he calls me and I said, oh my God, I'm supposed to call you when I get back.
Right.
And that was like within 7 days we were funded.
Street Smart Podcast, back in the lounge studios here at Upright Digital, talking today with the People's Champion, Tim Lowry.
Hello, hello.
And thanks for having me. Man, excited to have you here. And, you know, Josh was episode number 3. And, of course, there's no competition.
Never with him.
But no, never with him. He's not a competitive person at all.
Nope.
So he most likely will not be looking at the numbers or any of that to see where you guys shake out.
Who gets the most views?
But he definitely will look at that.
No question.
Yeah.
So what am I?
Well, I haven't figured it out yet. I have a few in the can. We'll figure out where you fall out.
The jockey in position here?
You'll be top 30. You'll be okay, before 30.
Hey,
but we'll figure it out.
It's an honor just to be nominated, so I'm glad to be here.
I've made a pretty good career out of being just an also-ran. So it's not the worst thing in the world. But yeah, I first met you. You were a guest on the Mission Zero podcast.
That's when right.
I was co-hosting that with Jeff Peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And you had, I forget who you brought with you.
Adam Van DeMortel.
There you go. That's right. And the conversation wasn't as much around the business you guys were building or had built. And I guess you guys were still in the process of sort of building that then.
Mm-hmm.
It was more around, you know, the problems you guys were solving from, right. You know, that perspective. And this is a little different than that, but I had to have you on. One, you're one of my favorite people to be around because you're a blast to be around.
Appreciate that.
Two, likewise. We've got some mutual friends that it's just, it's funny how you can meet in completely different eras, time-wise and location-wise, and then it just kind of comes together. And that stuff, I don't believe that that's accidental.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you're Josh's brother, so I'd love to do nothing more than to help you beat him in numbers. So we'll see what we can do.
Yeah.
He's but a tough no, man, follow, that, so. That's my first, you know, I first met you, man, and I just really liked the candor and the conversation. You were always wide open with what you were talking about, and even at that point, just the sort of the nature of where your business was at that point, you it would have been not unjustifiable to be somewhat secretive, but you weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was always kind of resonated with me. But I always like to start like where are you from, where were you raised, you know, that kind of stuff, and let's just get going there.
sure no you know, Texas born and raised. Was born in East Texas, Longview. I was kind of grew up and raised in north of Dallas, Trophy Club. Went to school out in West Texas at Texas Tech. And then I've been here in Houston for about 25 years. So really all over Texas.
Right. But only Texas.
Only Texas.
I don't know that I could live in another state. I've looked into it.
No. I lived in Australia for about 6 months right out of college.
Really?
I did, yeah.
You just said, I'm going to go learn to surf or what?
You know, sadly, I didn't learn to surf. I really should have. That's a personal regret.
Yeah.
But no, I just, you know, I graduated from Tech, and you know, honestly, I just was not ready to go to work. And had a buddy
went
of mine
on walkabout.
Went on a walkabout. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Had a buddy of mine that kind of gave me the idea, Tony Samples, and moved there for about 6 months, and got a visa, and just waited tables on the beach, and for most of the time. Then Josh actually came to see me. So I quit my job because they wouldn't give me the time off. So when I came back after he left, I worked for a furniture moving company. So just moving, you know, furniture in and out of houses in Sydney, wow. Australia.
Dude, that's waiting tables on a beach when you say it like that.
It's unbelievable.
Like, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was totally badass.
That sounds awesome. In Australia, no less.
Incredible.
What part of Australia?
Manly, Australia, which is like 7 miles outside of Sydney.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's cool. Yeah. What was that like living in another country? Was that, I mean, Australia is fairly Western, but mm-hmm. I mean, it is still another country.
You know, it's just, it was so far away. I mean, that was the biggest thing is just the
time
difference.
Not easy to get to, yeah.
Not easy to get to at all. But no, I loved it. You know, very Western. You know, you're there and you have an accent, right? So that was really cool. I love that.
Do they not realize they're the ones with the accent?
I kept telling them.
But, yeah. yeah.
So that was, I mean, it was just fun, you know, just kind of learning to be by myself. You know, you're so far away from everybody, you know, and I would kind of characterize it like it was Groundhog Day. You get up and you're going to work, you're coming home, and you're seeing a lot of the same people, but nobody knows you.
Right.
So it was great for me. You know, I learned to really enjoy my own conversation. You know, I've always been one of those guys in college where I'm like, you know, come with me here, or come with me there, and always want to be around people. And when you're there, you're alone, right? So you really kind of learn to talk to yourself in a way. Sounds kind of crazy, but kind of learn to enjoy my own conversation.
Well, that makes sense, though. I mean, if there's, you have to get comfortable being yourself, being with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it takes people a long time to do that naturally. So if you can sort of expedite that process by mm-hmm. changing location like that, mm-hmm. It probably was pretty advantageous. So you were there for 6 months before you came back to the States?
Yep, yep.
That 6 months feel like 6 months, or did it feel like no time at all, or a long time?
You know, probably felt more like a year, really. It didn't fly by.
Yeah.
But it felt like about a year, I'd say.
When you were a kid, you know, growing up in East Texas and then Trophy Club, which I've lived in Keller for a period of time, so mm-hmm. I know where Trophy Club is, and mm-hmm. you're a rich kid, and that's fine, but whatever.
Trophy Club, yeah, it's like the best name ever.
It's the best name. It's just the right amount of pretentious, right?
That's right. I think
you live in Trophy Club.
I think there's a strip club called Trophy Club as well, so right. You can really go either way.
Yeah, well, maybe that's where you lived.
Might need to edit that one out. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
We'll figure it out.
I worked at Trophy Club. That's what it was.
There it was. That's what it was. When you were a kid growing up, what did you want to be?
You know, a business owner, honestly. You know, not anything in particular. I always liked science, but I was not the best student, and apparently you got to do a lot of math in science.
Yeah, science is pretty math heavy.
That's right. So so just a business owner. You know, my dad was an entrepreneur. You know, Josh and I, we grew up, you know, watching him do his deal, and you know, having the customers come over to the house, they were his friends, and you know, that just looked cool. And you know, not really getting any specifics there on what I wanted to do in particular, but I just knew I wanted to start my own business.
Wow, that's awesome. You know, and so my dad owned businesses my whole life too, and I went the other way. I remember watching him go through some struggles in the, you know, early 80s and lose a family business, just no fault of his own. It was a thriving business. The oil industry just kind of, you know, shit the bed, and we were living in Midland, and when mm-hmm. that happens, it happens. And I was probably 8 to maybe 10 years old at the time, and watching him have to auction off the business and stuff, it had the opposite effect on me. It mm-hmm. wasn't a, man, I want to do this. It was a,
that looks fun.
Man, there's a ton of risk involved in that. And right. I don't think I can stomach that. So, I look forward to our conversation getting to the point and finding out kind of how you got through that barrier and everything. But you went off to Tech. What did you major in?
So, telemarketing. And it was my major, and then I had a minor in marketing.
Okay.
I'm sorry, telecommunications, not telemarketing. Telecommunications with a minor in marketing. Yeah, exactly.
So, and that's what you graduated with?
Yes.
Telecommunications. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you got out, you went to Australia, waited tables, great use of the degree.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Outstanding use of it. Probably a lot of valuable lessons that you learned had you not done that, man, your life probably ends up in the same place, but might take longer or might take a whole different path. So mm-hmm. it's great that you did that. And then you come back from Australia, and what do you do after you get back? What's the first thing you do job-wise when you come back?
So I came back from Australia, and I think literally it was 14 or 15 days later, I started at a company called Cryogenic Vessel Alternatives, and they're a cryogenic equipment manufacturer. And I started out as the purchasing manager. Right out of coming back from Australia and going into maybe one of the most boring jobs ever. Not right. boring, I shouldn't say that. Just really, it was such a challenging job.
Yeah.
I'm not the most organized person, and you know, just buying, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of parts and materials. But it was good because I really learned the componentry around what we sold and, sure. and what we build now.
When you're doing that, I mean, it's really easy for someone in that position to look at the purchases they're making of the componentry, like you talk about, and it's very transactional.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen in some cases a lot of people are in that position, and they never really ask, you know, what does that piece do? Where does that piece go? Why is that piece important?
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you found yourself doing? Like, show me why I'm ordering this stuff. Or was it more like, I'm just buying this stuff because it's my job?
No, you know, I wouldn't, you know, it was the type of business or really industry where you kind of have to train yourself.
Sure.
You know, so definitely had a lot of people answering questions for me on what widget was what, but, you know, it was mainly just kind of buying the pumps, buying the valves, and then going out there and looking at the equipment and just seeing where it all went and trying to understand how it all came together.
And so you're back in the States, you're purchasing manager, and in the back of your mind, are you still thinking like, man, I need to figure out, I want to own a business. I don't want to do this forever. Is that still in your long-term kind of thought process? Or are you now just kind of shifting gears into, okay, well, I've got a job and I'm going to work this job and see what happens.
You know, I mean, I think you're just trying to find your footing, really. You know, you're coming out of college where it's the greatest time of your life.
Right.
You know, and then you're in Australia, which is also the greatest time of your life. And then you're working. So you're just trying to get used to the day-to-day 8 to 5. And you're like, oh my God, I got to be doing this for the next 35, 40 years. And, you know, almost like a prison sentence in a way, you know, you're just like, wow. So, you know, just really getting my footing. And, you know, my father was an investor in the company, you know, so really you know, he's a silent investor. So you're just trying to, you know, live up to that name and do your part.
But yeah.
As far as like when we really thought about starting our own business, you know, my business partner now, Bob Ernle, and then Jack Smith, we were the three founders of ACT. He was my boss. And when I was probably 25, we were sitting in his office. And I guess the idea of those guys selling that company struck Bob. And he's like, you know, if these guys ever sell this company, would you ever think about going off and starting your own deal? And I was like, you know, you're 25, you don't know anything. I'm like, of course, that's, you know, yeah, that sounds great. That? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially cause you had that leaning anyway. You growing up, you were like, yeah, no, I do want to be a business owner. And then, you know, that had to feel like on some level, almost like karma, like, well, this conversation's happening. At least that's what I would internalize. Well, this is happening for a reason. My overarching goal as a kid was to be a business owner, and now this conversation's happening. It may not ever come to fruition, but
sure,
at least I'm thinking about it. Is that the way you felt about that during that time?
I'd say so. Absolutely.
Awesome. So how long did you work there?
So I was with CBA for about 7 years or so, and I was in procurement for the first 4 years, and then I was like, you know, this is just not really what I want to do. You know, everybody, my entire family's in sales. You know, I wanted to be in sales. I was always very kind of jealous of Josh. You know, he's out there working for, you know, the other family business, and I'm stuck in the office the entire time. So I really was positioning myself to leave the company and take a sales job in construction. And I was offered a job and then kind of went back to Hector and Chris and Dean. And instead of leaving the company, they put me into sales, and I went to work directly under Hector Villarreal, which was one of the partners in CVA.
Great. So how did you, I'll go back to real quick. How long after you had been with the company did you have that conversation around if this sold, would you want to do your own thing?
I don't remember, you know, a
couple years,
probably with, yeah, a couple years, something like that.
So 2 years in, and then you spent another 5.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
that, like, well,
it was just kind
I thought
of
that was a week,
a passing like, comment.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean?
I thought that was going to happen in a month. And here
I never still. Really thought of them selling the company. You know, they were just kind of starting it. I think they started it in 99. And this must have been 2004, so
sure.
You know they're still building their deal.
Yeah, right. That's right. And so then you transitioned into sales. How did you find that transition? Was it? Cause I remember one time I accidentally ended up in sales, just because that's where I ended up. And remember at that moment having a real appreciation for, oh, this is not an easy job. Like this, it looks easy. It looks like they're running around eating lunches and playing golf and shooting shotguns, but this is hard work. How was your transition into that role?
It was easy. Yeah. You know, I mean, it really was. You know, I'm always, you know, I just have a personality for sales, you know, and wanting to get into it, seeing my brothers doing what they were doing, seeing my dad doing what he was doing. You know, I'd been raised that way my whole life. Like,
sure.
Like I said, you know, my dad's customers would come stay with us. They were his friends. So, you know, from that perspective, I was just, you know, you're a lower level sales guy. So you're just doing whatever they tell you to do.
Right.
And I was so excited to get out of procurement.
Right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, the personality side of sales, I was always pretty good at. It was just the, like, oh, man, like, for me, it was the transactional nature of it and the idea that it was demotivating to me. So, like, rather than looking at it from a, man, I could make limitless amounts of money by just selling more widgets, I was like, I want to know why they want to buy the widget and help them strategically think about why they need that one or more. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't lend itself well to like a commission sales role. Mm-hmm. And so it was always very stressful for me to even think about taking that type of role. But it's interesting, you know, you end up in sales and was where you, your whole family had kind of been, and your personality is absolutely suited for that. And did you like sales? Did you like working in that side?
I did. I loved it. You know, and kind of to your comment there, I think you have to really understand what people need and what they want to sell anything, right? If you're if you're really going to sell something, you have to listen to what they need, and then kind of design your solution around what those needs are, if you can meet them.
Right. And if you can't, figure out a way to help them understand why that solution might not be right for them.
Or move on.
That's right. So you were in sales for another 3-4 years.
About 3 years. Yeah. There.
3 years. Mm-hmm. And then you leave the company?
I did. Yeah. And then I ended up leaving in 2009. Went to work for a company called, I'm going to say it's Staubli. I would say Staubli, but it's a Swiss family business.
Pronounce it again.
It's Staubli. And it's Staubli, but if you're in Switzerland, they would say Staubli.
It's beautiful.
I'm probably saying it incorrectly.
It's beautiful though.
Yeah. Very, I mean, amazing company, really. They did robotics, they did textiles, and they did connectors, and I was in the connector division. So I sold high pressure, high temperature connectors, and their big claim was they actually have a connector on the space station.
No, that's cool.
And the floor of the ocean. So they do subsea wellhead connectors. And different stuff like that. So
the most extreme, each direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Highly specialized connectors.
Yeah. So you were with them for how long?
About 3 years.
So all this here in the Houston area.
So they're based, it's a Swiss company. The factory's in France. And then, the US headquarters is in, where did I work? I'm drawing a blank all of a sudden, in South Carolina.
Okay. And so you were living in Duncanville. South Carolina or no?
No, I was living here, working out of my house, doing outside sales, and it was fantastic. I mean, loved it.
You were remote before remote was cool.
I was remote. Yeah, I loved it. You know, it was really, I called it rehab because, you know, at CVA, you're just working your ass off all the time. And I certainly worked hard for Staubli, but it was just a different transition, different type of company, you know, larger company, different product altogether, working out of the house, you know, I just turned 30. So early 30s working out of the house, you just can't beat that.
No. You married at this point?
Yep. I was married. Been married for almost 20 years.
Did you have kids at that point?
I did, yeah. 2 kids.
So how did you find moving into, okay, I have a home office now, that distraction and that type of stuff? Was that there or were there barriers against that?
There were barriers. You know, they were doing their school deals. So I'd get up and, you know, take them to school or see them off to school. And, you know, I was one of those guys, even though I was working from home, I would get dressed up just like I was going into the office, and I'd be in my office at 8 doing outside, you know, outside sales. So I'd leave around 9:30, do all my calls in the Houston area, be back by 3:30, miss all the traffic.
Yep.
And it was beautiful. Great job.
Yeah. So I had that same experience. Like I said, when I actually ended up in sales, it was with Exterran, and they were Archrock. They were switching to Archrock at the time. And I was working out of Keller, but I had basically a greenfield list of accounts there in Dallas. So that's exactly what I would do. I'd get up in the morning, get dressed for the day, go into my office, all the Salesforce CRM stuff I had to do, get in my car about 9, head to Dallas, do all of my stuff, back on the road by 3:30, back home. You couldn't beat it.
It's a good life.
It wasn't terrible. Mm-hmm. It wasn't terrible. So you're there. How long are you with them?
About 3 years.
3 years. That's right. You said that. And so at that point, are you still in your mind, like, are you still thinking about that conversation? Like, so that conversation in my mind would be fairly formative in terms of like, someone thought enough of me to ask me this question at 25.
Yeah.
Now I'm 30. I'm still thinking about that.
You know, it's interesting. You know, I must have been because, you know, I called one of my business partners and I was asking if I could park my car, at their location, and CVA had since sold to a company called Inox. So the company had just really changed a lot. And there was a show out in Lafayette, and I was going to meet Josh. We were going to drive out there together. So I had called Bob and I said, hey, you know, I'm going to park my car here over the next few days, make sure it doesn't get towed. And it was in that conversation where he said, hey, do you remember that question I asked you all those years ago? Or I forget exactly how he said it. And I said, I do. And he said, would you still want to? And I said, fuck yes, I would.
That's awesome, man. How many years after that conversation was this?
Five to seven, something like that. Probably 8 at that point.
Yeah, the better part of a decade. Mm-hmm. And so he'd been thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you definitely had. And I mean, how amazing that you just that like, hey, I'm gonna park my car here, make sure it doesn't get towed away.
It's
and then he
said,
oh, hey, by the way, you still interested in that?
Yeah.
When he said that to you, what was your, I mean, obviously, you, like you said, what your response was, what was your, in your mind, you're like, man, that whole trip to Louisiana now, my brain is thinking about that.
Well, you know, it really, I'll step back for a second. You know, we all know Josh, and, you know, Josh has been just a huge part of my life. And I forget exactly how much, you know, earlier it was before Bob had asked that question, but I was out to lunch with Josh. And we had lunch and we're walking out, we're sitting there in the parking lot and, you know, we're having these live conversations, you know, and Josh is a pretty wise guy, actually, you know, he's got a lot of wisdom.
Surprisingly.
Very surprisingly.
You wouldn't know that.
You wouldn't.
You got to talk to him for a minute to figure it out.
But super encouraging.
Absolutely.
You know, he's, you know, such a real guy. And we're sitting there and he goes, you know, he's coaching me. And he said, Tim, and this is when we're leaving, we're walking out. I'll never forget it. He goes, do you ever think, and the only part I don't like about the story is that it involves money, and I think it kind of takes away from what the actual, what it meant to me. Mm-hmm. And he goes, you know, do you ever think that you'll make $1 million in a year? And I really stepped back, and I just kind of thought, and I said, I don't know. You know, I guess I've never really thought about it. And I'll never forget it. He goes, that's your fucking problem. You need to change the way you think. And I got in my car, and I'm driving home, and I'm like, you can change the way you think.
Yeah. The nerve of this guy.
It was a paradigm shift. No, like I just didn't, I'd never thought of that, you know,
right.
And just, you can really change the way you think. That was very impactful on me, actually. And I really started to try to change the way I think and kind of get out of the typical ruts that you kind of put yourself in this box. And I tried to really get myself out of that box. And it was that comment that really got me thinking that way.
What a fantastic comment. And you know what, just a great, you know, brother, mm-hmm. and friend. I mean, you guys are obviously very, very
absolutely.
Close as brothers, but mm-hmm. I mean, friends as well.
We are.
And when you have someone in your life that can speak that kind of a truth to you, mm-hmm. It's pretty amazing. And you're right. But it's interesting though, with you having like, I wanted to own a business my whole life or whatever. And so many times owning a business, you've got to be able to change the way you think about something. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Did you up until that moment not recognize that as something that is a skill you'd have to have?
You know, I don't think I did.
Yeah.
You know, you really start to, you're still growing up and, you know, you're in your early 30s still trying to carve out your career, you know, and I loved working for Stobbly. You know, I was making the most money I'd ever made. I was working from home. You know, I had two young kids, you know, beautiful wife, you know, I really had it all. And had a month vacation. You know, they would encourage you. You know, it's a European company. So
right. Yeah. When they go on vacation, they go on vacation.
Yeah. I mean, and they're a great company, but they closed down in all of August. So, you know, it's just a different lifestyle.
Sure.
And that's why I kind of say it was like rehab. You know, it's just learning a different way to really have that work-life balance. And they were really good at it. So lost my train of thought there. But
well, you were talking about how, and this is a lot of ways how I feel at this point in my life. You know, I've got a fantastic job and mm-hmm. my family's secure and we have home and things are great and we have money in the bank mm-hmm. and now if someone came to me and said, hey, risk all of that and let's start a business, I'd be like, oh yeah, good luck with that. But it'd be something for me to be really, really hard for me to wrap my mind around. I think that's where you're going with that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're definitely reminding me, you know, of different parts of it, but you know, at that stage, you know, you really have nothing to lose. You know, it really depended on how old I was at the time. You know, we didn't have any money. You know, we're still just, like I said, kind of carving out your life. So when the opportunity came up, you know, I was like, this is the perfect time. You know, if I fail, you know, I'll recover. You know, there's plenty of time left in my career to do that. And then the further along we got into ACT, you know, the way I describe it is, you know, I had nothing to lose. And then at the end, I had everything to lose. And just that 10-year, it's amazing what happens in 10 years.
Right. Yeah, no, 10 years is a long time, but, man, you can compress a whole bunch of shit into a 10-year mm-hmm. period. Mm-hmm. And it really isn't that long when you think about the grand scope of things. So
goes quick.
Has that conversation with you. You head off to Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Your car does not get towed.
Doesn't get towed.
So it's a good thing you made that call. And at what point do you guys begin kind of talking about the formation of ACT and what that's going to look like?
So they had already kind of been thinking about it, and I really did just kind of come into it and I said, you know, let me be a part of this. You know, I can do sales. I was the number one or number two salesman at Stobbly every year I was there. you know, and ultimately, you know, I'm a good salesman, but I had a great market, I had a great customer, you know, and we can get into it here in a little bit, but you know, I didn't really sell anything until I came to ACT, you know, and I'll explain that here in a little bit, but we would get together and put together our business plan. You know, we'd work at nights, we'd work on weekends, you know, everybody had their day jobs. And it took probably 6 months to really get out there and get that funding. And I was actually at a, you know, it was like Business Pro, what we bought this program on putting your business case together, your business plan. And it took us forever. Like there were so many different slides. I mean, it was just so many damn questions. And ultimately our business plan ended up being like 15 slides on a PowerPoint. That was it. You kind of condense it all, but we could have never really put that information together had we not gone through that exercise.
The more exhaustive exercise.
Correct. Yeah.
So from the time that you had that conversation with him, hey, don't tow my car, to you begin the evenings and weekend sessions of planning to go for out for funding and that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. What's the sort of the timing from that? You know, 6 months, like when I got
probably,
back from
probably
Louisiana,
9 months. You know, nine months. Probably. Yeah.
So again, you had the conversation, then another whole 9 months go by. Mm-hmm. Guaranteed you're thinking about it, and, mm-hmm. and they are too.
Yep.
And what was the catalyst to get you guys in the same room to start the sort of planning sessions?
The catalyst, I mean, I think when I came on board, you know, Jack and Bob, they're just super, super smart guys. Like they could just very mechanical, operation minded. And the catalyst, I think, was just the idea of getting out and doing our own thing. And of course, you don't start a business unless you think you can do it better. And that was it. Just trying to, at the time, oil was like $115 a barrel. Right. You know, it's like, this is going to be easy. You know,
this is awesome.
It was. And then not long after we started, it dropped. Sure. And it was really the first of, probably the second energy downturn of my career. And then we had to kind of pivot from what our original plan was and do something else.
Yeah, what I meant about catalyst, though, is like, so you guys had this conversation, and then 9 months go by. I guess there are probably conversations intermittently between there. Mm-hmm. At what point was the decision made, let's go forward with this and all get in the same room and really start planning this thing?
Oh, I mean, day one. Oh, you know,
just all in.
It really was. Yeah, okay. You know, I basically said, you know, I can do the sales. I'll drive across this country. I'll do whatever it takes. I can get funding. Not even knowing if I could get funding.
I can do all this.
I can do all these things. Yeah. And it took a long time. You know, we did the whole Business Pro thing and then condensed it down to 15 slides, and we're pitching it to different potential investors. And it just wasn't sticking. And it was, I forget what month it was, but I was up in Minnesota for sales training, the only sales training I have ever done in my career. And it was like a 3-day course. And right before I left, Jack had said, you know, why don't you ask your dad if he can get us in touch with him guys. And I said, okay, I'll do it when I get back from Minnesota. And it was, I think, the third day of training, maybe the only day I paid attention. And my phone rings, and it's Jim O'Neill, my stepfather. And I stepped out of the training, and he says, hey, I'm up here in Canada. And they're saying, hey, you know, can you introduce us to this guy over here? And, you know, we want to get into the cryogenic business. And my dad said, you should really talk to my son and his friends. And within a week, we're in Beaumont, and we're funded. It was just the craziest. And so he calls me, and I said, oh my God, I'm supposed to call you when I get back.
Right.
And that was like within 7 days, we were funded.
Man, that's remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, talk about just, oh, this is supposed to happen. So at this point, you have to be feeling like, oh, this is ordained. Like, there's no way this fails.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, I really never had a doubt that we were going to do what we were going to do. I mean, just naive and ignorance. You don't know. You know, I had no idea how hard it would be. I really thought it would be easier. But then you get into it and you realize it's just nothing but work. It really is. But even with all that, you know, and looking back, you know, you would just never, if you knew what you'd go through, you would never do it. You know, so it's better not to know.
Yeah.
And then once you get into it, you know, you're learning all these lessons, and, you know, it had to be, to do what we did, I mean, just a less than 1% chance of probability. But in my mind, you know, it was always going to happen.
And that belief came from what?
You know, I don't know. I just confidence in myself, confidence in my team, you know, working with Bob and Jack, we, you know, I just knew that we would figure it out. You know, they, we did have a big competitive advantage on the engineering side. You know, we did design trailers that were lighter, hauled more molecules down the road, and ultimately, you know, better net earnings for our customer. And that was our pitch. So we had a design advantage. But it was, even with that, you know, I just, when you make the choice that you're going to do something and you have that goal, you know, you're going to have all different kinds of ups and downs, but as long as you're, you know, changing whatever behavior you need to achieve that goal and kind of adapting to the situation, you will succeed, you know? So I don't know, just a kind of a blind belief in a way. I'm not really sure where it came from, but I definitely had it.
Yeah. Well, in my mind, there were too many things lining up, you know, like just the funding thing's a fantastic example of that. Mm-hmm. And if it were me, I'd be like, oh yeah, this, I know how hard this should be, and things seem to be aligning for us. So we're either doing something absolutely correct, mm-hmm. or this is supposed to happen this way. So you guys get funded, and what's the first thing you do after you get funded? What do you start working on next?
So we got funded, and part of our deal was we were going to build LNG trailers to stock. So we built the first 50 trailers without a customer. So we just went straight to work. So for me, you know, I was VP of sales and marketing, so I'm, you know, getting all the advertisements ready, and it's really difficult to get, you know, brochures together when you have no pictures.
And you guys are going to sell these trailers, not lease them, right?
Sell them. And just kind of market them off availability. And that's when LNG, kind of like hydrogen is today, you know, LNG was the sexy word. Everybody's getting into it. And, you know, there was, you know, other competitors out there where people were buying really based off prospection. You know, they would just go out there and buy equipment, you know, anticipating the need. And then it didn't take long for oil to drop and all those dynamics to change. And really, it was within the first 18 months of us being in business. But, you know, what did I do right when we got funded? I went to work, started going through basically like the phone book, you know, different trade show, we were looking at different trade shows. So I'd go get that list and I would just call down alphabetically each customer trying to make that first sale.
How long did it take you to make the first sale?
We did it within, we had to do it within the first 90 days, or we went out of business. So how long did it take? It took about,
89
two and days. A half months. Yeah, it really did. So like, let's see, we opened up the shop there in September and I had it sold by December, and we were building it, as we're obviously trying to sell it, and, went up to, I just watched the Pursuit of Happiness actually with Will Smith. And there's a scene in there where if you look at that, you know, he has to do everything, you know, and go pick up his son. So he's trying to figure out how he can be more efficient, you know, how he doesn't hang up the phone, mm-hmm. doesn't drink any water. So he didn't have to go to the bathroom. And I'm like, my God, you know, I'm going to be like this guy. So I go in there and, I'm just literally going down that list of people at a trade show, and it's 11:55, and, Jack pops his head into my office and he's like, let's go to lunch. So I start to get up and I'm like, I got five more minutes. Now I don't go to lunch. I eat in my office. So it's kind of weird how you transition there.
Sure.
But so I sat down and my next call was to Rev LNG. And Dave picks up the phone and he goes, I was just about to, your timing is perfect. I was just about to place an
Always
order.
Like to hear that.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody ever says that. And he goes, I was just about to place an order. You know, why don't you send me a quote? And I said, okay. And I, where are you located? And he goes, Rochester. And I said, oh my God, I'm actually going to be in Rochester next week. And he goes, really? And I said, yeah. And he goes, okay, well, we'll come by and see me. And I hang up the phone and I book my flight to Rochester.
Yeah, it just turns out I was just going to be there right after you told me where I needed to be.
So absolutely.
It works out great. So that's awesome. So in this time period, I mean, you're married and kids. Mm-hmm. And this is going to take a tremendous amount of your energy and time and patience and all of that stuff. You know, you're still married to the same woman. Mm-hmm. So huge amount of patience on her part, I would imagine. How did you guys navigate that when you said, okay, babe, guess what? I've got a great idea and it's going to be absolutely brutal, but worth it.
You know, at first, you know, she might disagree with this now, but you know, she didn't want me to do it. And, you know, she didn't see all the things that I saw. And, you know, we do have a very competitive family. We do, you know, and I saw that as my, you know, maybe my only opportunity. You know, at the time, this was like my first and best opportunity. And I'm doing this no matter what. You know, and once she kind of saw that and saw that belief, you know, she never really questioned it, you know, and we were fortunate to where she was staying at home, you know, watching the kids, and we just went to work and she trusted me. She really did.
Man, that's huge. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's so many times I've watched friends of mine and other people that my dad knows that have been entrepreneurs, started businesses, found it, and they just grind relationships into powder.
Yeah.
It to say that's not been a concern of mine if I ever decided to do that, it's like, man, I don't know if the juice is worth that, you know? And so it's always, I always ask that question, especially, you know, knowing when someone's going to start a business that ends up, you know, at the scope that yours did, that takes a lot of work and mm-hmm. a lot of hours and a lot of dedication, a lot of attention that has to be placed there that then can't be placed other places.
Sure.
Yeah. And that sport's absolutely necessary. So I'm always curious how, you know, like you said, your wife initially, her response was, man, don't do it. And then, you know, how you bridge that over to, okay, go ahead. And it was just her seeing that you believed it.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, I was traveling all over the country. You know, I'd never traveled that much in my life. And our other brother, my younger brother, Dan, we're playing golf one time on the weekend. And he said, I forget where I said I was going. And he said, do you have to go there? And I said, Dan, I don't do anything I don't think I have to do, you know? So right. That's kind of the same to Adriana, you know, she just knew that I had to do it, you know, and to do whatever was required.
Yeah. And that's important too, that they see that, hey, this is not something that I'm choosing to do just to go do it.
Right.
This is something I believe will further the business and help get me back to a place where I don't have to.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. I would always say, you know, I'm doing future Tim a favor. I said that so many times, you know, doing future Tim a favor. And Josh, this is not his quote, but it's something he said to me. He goes, Tim, excuse me. He goes, people are rewarded in public for what they practice in private for years. You know, and I would just lean on that, you know, just get up early in the morning, drive to work. And, you know, I've always had that feeling that you could just work your way out of an issue, you know, and if there's a problem, there's only one way to solve it. And that's to work on it and solve it, you know, and not hide from it.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's another saying that it's one of the presidents. I'm going to say Roosevelt because he gets credit for all of them. Mm-hmm. But it was like the worst thing to do or the best thing to do in a situation is the right thing. The second best is the wrong thing. The worst thing is nothing.
That's right.
So you're right. You can work yourself out of a situation. Mm-hmm. And that's rewarded. Hard work is rewarded, and it may not feel like it in the moment, but it definitely is. And so you guys, you make your first sale and you're like, we're on our way.
Yep.
And so then that kind of walk me through the next like few years there of like, okay, now we've made a sale. Now we have a product on the market. And you guys said you had a design advantage and those mm-hmm. things are fantastic, but they go away at some point. People catch up to that design. So you've got to continue to innovate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously right. That was a big part of your business. Help me think, help walk me through like the next, from first sale to the next, like, okay, now we're really kind of going and things are looking good.
So really within the first 18 months, you know, oil just tanked, mm-hmm. you know, and that was, you know, our core business was going to be selling LNG equipment into the oil field and well service equipment. You know, so that was our first design. So we're, you know, our next design was a liquid nitrogen trailer, for well servicing applications. And then again, within the first 18 months, it's like we had to rebuild and redo the entire plant again. And we shifted to industrial gas, which are your Air Liquides, your Mathesons, your major industrial gas companies, and which really the industrial gas industry follows typically GDP. And about 50% of that market are your Mathesons and Air Liquides and those guys. And then the other 50% are mom and pop, you know, independent businesses. So we pivoted immediately and started designing aluminum cryogenic trailers for that market. And then that market really sustained us. It's very cyclical, but, you know, it sustained us for the next 5 years. You know, and LNG really never completely went away. It didn't. But, you know, we just started adding to that portfolio and adding more products to sell. So that kept us pretty busy for about 5 years there. And then... you know, leading up to 2020, you know, that's when we were really starting to take off, you know, and it's just so hard to make money starting a business, and especially within manufacturing, we were really starting to kind of get our footing. And then 2020 happened, and, you know, had to pivot again. You know, it's amazing all the things that have happened within the last 10 years.
Yeah, 2020 was like, oh, it looks good, man. Psych. You don't get any of it. Yeah.
Just brutal. Brutal.
It did that to a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think everybody could write a book on 2020.
It'd probably be the same basic book.
It would be. Yeah. A lot of the same.
It would be a very similar book over and over and over again. But so, yeah, I mean, that's interesting, too. I mean, you guys get funded, you get started, make your first sale. But that's not without a lot of overhead. Like, you guys had to bring on a facility. You had to bring on personnel, you know, all of those things. And obviously, that's captured in your business plan. Mm-hmm. What about all of that ramp up surprised you that you were like, oh, shit, man, we didn't account for that? Or was there anything?
No, I mean, we pretty much accounted for, you know, as much as you can. You know, it's all about risk mitigation. And, you know, Bob Ernle, our CEO, you know, he's just wired for that. So he's constantly looking for risk and trying to identify that risk and, you know, trying to figure out ways to mitigate that risk. So for the most part, you know, we were just trying to keep the boat afloat, you know, waiting for that market to come back, waiting for oil to come back, which it never really did.
Like, right, yeah.
You know, just a huge transition.
Yeah, it just... Day one, when you started the company, it was let's build this and sell it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How do you think that changed the way that you were planning the structure of the company? Did it change any of that? Or, I mean, what? So it's obviously a different mindset than I'm going to go into this, I'm going to build it, and then it'll be a generational company, mm-hmm. right? Or whatever. You're saying we're going to build this to a point and then we're going to exit this thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you're beginning that process, if you're looking at it from that standpoint, what would you say was something that you did differently, or do you even know?
Well, I mean, like you said, leasing equipment, you know, that was a part of that model. It was always going to be, you know, build it. It's a transactional deal. You know, let's try to get these contracts to sell the new equipment. And, you know, leasing was never part of that equation. You know, building the trailers for ourselves and being a contract hauler was never part of that equation. You know, it's such a small customer base, you know, it really is. So we just kind of stayed focused on building the new equipment and selling it to the end user.
Yeah, so I mean, when those opportunities arose, it was enticing, but you were like,
hey, stay focused. Yeah, this is the
focus here, guys. Mm-hmm. This is what we're doing.
Right,
that's great. And to have that type of focus, I think is critical,
mm-hmm.
Especially when it's so easy to get outside of maybe just outside it. Almost it's parallel to what you're doing, but it feels like it's the same thing.
Right,
but it can really take you down a path that, you know, is very destructive in a lot of cases. So 2020 happens, which happened to all of us.
Mm.
And right. And like you said, is right when you start like, man, we got this thing down, we're getting some footing, we're starting to move forward. At this point, the company's how old? 2020?
8 years.
So 8 years. So mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's an established brand. Like, you guys are,
yeah,
are going,
yep.
You know, we're turning product.
Had here. A great reputation.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. So 2020 hits and go.
2020 hits and just the shit hits the fan.
Yeah. You know? Oh yeah.
We were, you know, we would do our board meetings. Our board meetings were always on always on Saturdays, you know, and it was the last Saturday of the month following the preceding quarter.
Okay.
Right. So we're in our Q4 board meeting. You know, sales were down. You know, we would always have a drop dead date where I had to sell a trailer by this date because you have to know what you're going to build so you can buy the materials. And we're just chasing these drop dead dates all the time. And we go to this board meeting and I forget what our backlog was. But one of our principal investors, you know, he says, he asked a question about like, how are sales? And I don't remember the answer that I gave. I just know it was just some like bullshit answer, like sugarcoating it.
It's all good, man.
Yeah, it's good. It's nothing to worry about. All is fine.
I'm on my way to Rochester. Yeah. It's going to be great.
Exactly. I'll figure it out. And he leans back and he starts talking to everybody, you know, and I appreciated it. But he goes, you know, starts talking about candor and being candid. And I'm thinking, oh my God, he's talking to me.
Oh man, this is this is not a group conversation.
This is not a group conversation.
This is well disguised.
yeah, maybe not even that well disguised. Yeah. And he gets up and, you know, finishes. He gets up and he's walking out the door and he goes, "Just let me know when I need to get nervous." And I swear to God, those words haunted me in Q1 of 2020. And I'm just like, okay, I got plenty of time here, you know. And it's January goes by, you know, February goes by. You know, we're not getting any, you know, any really new business of
towards the end of January, people thought it's still just a normal year.
Yeah, I mean, we actually,
like, hey, this is not a big deal.
Not a big deal at all, you know. And then February, and then really March is when it really started to go really crazy. And you know, March 1st, I sent an email out to my sales guys, and I said, we have to close everything, you know, everything. If you got it, you have to win it. You have to close everything. And then March 1st, 2nd, 3rd. You know, each day was worse than the day before, you know, and I was like, okay, I cannot watch the news, stop watching the news. So I stopped watching the news immediately. And, you know, of course, 6th, 7th, the 8th. And then on March 13th, I'll never forget it. It was a Friday. And,
of course it was Friday, the 13th.
Friday the 13th. And, you know, we have my stepfather, Jim O'Neill, and then our father, Greg Lowry, you know, a great, great relationship was in our lives. But he was having a back surgery, and he chose Friday the 13th to have back surgery. So I'm driving, don't have anything going on, you know, so I'm driving out to East Texas to go help him through that. And I'm trying to close this deal. And, I literally called my customer and I said, "Have you watched the news today?" And he said, "No." And I go, "Do not watch it until I call you." And I'm literally pulling over trying to revise this quote on my way to East Texas. And I got my hotspot with my phone. And, finally I'm like, you know, screw it. I'll just send it when I get to my dad's house. And I walk in, go to the front door. He's got Fox News on, and it's President Trump declaring a national emergency. And I'm like, oh my God.
Oh no.
This is terrible. Like, no one's going to buy anything. So I can get lost in the story a little bit, but I end up selling that trailer to the customer. And, you know, I'm at the hospital, and I call Bob up, and I'm like, you know, and at that time, you know, I thought I had to sell two trailers just to push that drop dead date back. And I sold the one, and I'm like, man, I'm sorry. You know, I sold one. And he goes, "No, that's all you had to do." He goes, "It's no blood. No blood. Good job. Now, all you have to do is do that exact same thing every week for the next 52 weeks. And it's going to hurt like hell. But if you do it, we'll be fine." And
no pressure.
No pressure. So then, you know, March and then into April, we decided that we were going to, we called it the Golden Roads Letters. And we're sitting there in his office, and it's like 8 o'clock at night. And he goes, "This is going to be the most beautifully written letter. It's going to take us at least 3 days. And we're going to send it out to all of our major customers and basically say, hey, you need us.
Please buy something.
You need to buy something. You know, let's not lose track of this moment. You know, you need the equipment. You're still going to need the equipment. Let's keep these things moving." And, so we developed these letters, you know, and at that time people are trying to like stay like not just in business, but like continue to go to work. And we were part of that critical infrastructure, where, you know, I called one of my customers and they said, you know, "You might want this letter. You know, there's a letter out there that you need," you know. Actually, they were critical infrastructure, the industrial gas guys. So, you know, then I have to go get this letter, and then we print this letter just so our employees can come to work. So you're trying to fight all that and also, you know, not get COVID that nobody knows really anything about. So, we're trying to, you know, develop this, you know, write this letter and then, you know, keep the doors open literally so we can continue to build the equipment. And, we were so concerned that they were going to really shut the country down, you know, and I forget when they did that, but, you know, I'd gone out to lunch at Chick-fil-A and they closed the inside of Chick-fil-A, and I'm in the drive-thru, and I'm like, oh my God, they
Chick-fil-A drive-thru is amazing.
Yeah. They're going to close the entire country down. So we're just like running around like,
you know, when God's chicken gets shut down,
it's bad.
It's bad time.
It's bad. Yeah. It's bad. So, so we developed these, you know, we're writing this letter, and, Bob goes, you know, we're in his office, and he goes, "You know, Tim, we're going to get these out. We're going to get these sales. We're going to stabilize the production line. And then you can go home and turn on the news and you won't care, because you'll just be going right down this golden river, you know, and trying to get, you know, getting really, we were just trying to get out of 2020. So we were fortunate enough to where we have great customers, and we came through with a couple orders that really sustained us. We slowed the production line down to kind of buy time. And then we have two production lines, the aluminum production line and then our steel line. So we stabilized the aluminum line, and we're good to go for 6 months. We're almost through the year. And then we had to stabilize the steel line. And, you know, those orders were just not falling off trees. Like there weren't even a lot of prospective opportunities. And there was one of our customers, Pesha, they ship goods from the Port of Long Beach to Hawaii. You know, private, you know, family business, I think third or fourth generation, really great company. And they just built these LNG powered ships. And we did a mobile LNG bunkering, which is like a gas station, you know, a fill station for these ships. And it was 40 steel LNG ISO containers and then a 6-pump manifold skid, you know, and really I wanted the steel containers more than anything.
Sure.
It was a big order, and it was really the only order. So of course, you know, that's dragging out over months and months and months, and the drop dead date had passed again.
You're talking about closing that deal.
Closing that deal. Yeah. And it was September, and it was getting, and they wanted to buy these containers from China, and they wanted to buy the pump skid from us. So we're trying to like incentivize and, you know, package this deal.
Buy all of it from me.
And they're like, yeah, but it's they're cheaper from China. They're cheaper from China, you know, and we're going through that whole pitch. And I'm sitting there. What was I doing there? And I go back to that training, the one training class I took where I only paid attention for one day. They had given me all these workbooks and that I never filled out. And I don't even know how the hell I still had these things. And I'm like, where are those books? You know, I'm going to go read those books, and I'm going to craft this closing pitch. And I go up there, I get them out of my attic, I flip to the back. It's like, you know, when you're in grade school, yeah, your math book,
really index.
All the answers are in the back, right?
Yeah.
All the evens or odds or whatever it was. That's kind of how they had all the answers in the back. So I just flipped to the back, straight to the answers. And I just started looking for answers that I liked. And then when I would see an answer that I liked, I would craft my question around that answer. And, you know, we're pretty, we get pretty weird when we go to close a deal. Like we'll do role playing. You know, Bob and I will role play. We'll talk to a column if we have to, just to kind of get that, to get used to saying what you're going to say and your delivery. So we come up with these 10 bullet points on why it's better to buy from us. And at the very end, it's like, it's score one for the home team. And Bob said, no, score one for the fucking home team. And I want you to say it just like that. So we call this guy, we call Ed, and I start talking, and, you know, just talking normal, you know, not raising my voice at all. And Ed's trying to kind of interrupt me, and I've got 10 bullet points, and I got to get to the end to say that one line. And I just continue to talk over him. And, you know, finally he stops talking, and I get down and I say that one line. I feel like I've said the F word on your show like 5 times now, but
that's okay.
I did. I said, you know, and Ed, let's score one for the fucking home team. Come on. And, I guess maybe a week or so later, he calls me up and we get that order. So then we stabilized the steel line. And that was September. So the first 9 months was just like really trying to stay in business.
So you're crediting the F word with stabilizing the steel?
I think so. That's such a good word.
It's very
impactful.
For the emphasis that you needed for that is perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's so, it's one of those things where, especially at that time, there was just this like, you just felt like the country was just getting just destroyed at every turn in many, many ways. But you wanted to, we were still Americans, and you still wanted to be American and be proud to be American. And so I think it's and it's also so atypical of that type of a conversation to drop an F-bomb that
it,
way.
It is. Yeah.
That it's impactful.
I mean, we were throwing the kitchen sink, you know, and I there's a couple stories I definitely want to make sure I tell about the candid. You know, and I skipped over it, but it was in March, and I'm at my dad, you know, in Longview, helping him through this surgery over the weekend. And, you know, I'm just depressed, like super, super like, oh my God, you know, how am I going to, you know, I've always been able to see a path, you know, no matter how dark it was. And I couldn't see a path, you know, and I even get emotional telling the story, but it was Saturday, you know, I take my little brother out for some ice cream, and then I wake up on Sunday, and then I go to buy my dad some supplies because I'm leaving Sunday because I have to go to work and close some deals on the 15th.
Yeah, I got to get going.
I got to get going. And I'm driving through Longview, and I love Longview. You know, it's a beautiful town, but, you know, people from Longview are going to hate when I say this, but, like, there's a lot of rundown buildings, you know, and a lot of those jobs left, you know, 30, 40 years ago, you know, and went overseas. So it's really, you know, it's a beautiful town, but there's a lot of rundown buildings. And at the time, you know, we had an opportunity to sign, like, this engineering deal to design the special type of rail car. And, you know, it was something that I hadn't really been pushing. And then I'm driving home trying to kind of get my game plan together. And
he's trying to sabotage your numbers.
Yeah, he really is. Yeah. And so I'm driving through this town, and I'm like, you know, what am I doing? You know, I'm just, you know, I could close this deal, and the company has a big plant there in Longview. And if that deal goes well, it can bring hundreds of jobs to this town. So I'm just kind of like going through this thought process, and I'm like, this is the kind of impact you can have. All you have to do is survive. So for the next 3 hours, I'm like, okay, what does my customer look like? You know, and I'm like, he's one to three people. You know, any more, they're just going to confuse it. You know, I ended up getting to Dave Kilborn. I'm like, you know, I had two or three guys that I thought I could call. And, you know, if you remember that time, you know, Monday through Friday, phones were ringing off the hook. Everybody was busy as hell. So I texted Dave and I said, can I talk to you tonight? I'm going to call you when I get home. And he says, yeah, no problem. So I get home from that trip and walk straight to my printer, and I pull off these, you know, printer paper, and I put it on the table, and I just kneel down, don't even sit, and I have a pencil. And I'm like, okay, what do I want? And I literally wrote that out. And I was like, what do I want? And right. And I wrote down time. And I was like, how do I get it? And I wrote that down. And then I said, well, one trailer is a week, four is a month. And I have it all right there. And I call Dave, and I'm like, Dave, you know, I've been trying to be more candid. And I said, at the end of this call, I'm going to ask you to buy something, you know, but really I want to buy something from you. What do I want? Time. How do I get it? One trailer is a week, four trailers is a month. And this is Sunday night, and he buys them right there without even a price. He's like, we'll work out the price. And I mean, I went to bed and I slept like a baby. And then I get up that morning and I'm feeling great, obviously. And this is March 16th. And I called Josh. And another funny story, you know, Greg Lowry, our dad, you know, when I was graduating high school or college, I can't remember exactly when it was, I was like, and I was not the best student. I said, you know, I'm just going to be myself. And he goes, no, don't be yourself.
Strongly advise against
you
that.
I struggle. You not be. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, you can't be yourself. No. And, you know, I want to give him some credit. Like, now he's like, that's not how I meant it. But, I was like, what do you mean? I can't be myself. So, you know, fast forward 15 years into my career, you know, I'm talking to Josh, and I said, you know, I've been through three energy downturns, two 800-year floods, and the ice apocalypse or whatever it was. Just actually, that was 2021. There was one more. Like I think we missed two hurricanes like a week earlier. Like just the most ridiculous stuff. And I said, and each time I just worked my hardest, and each time we made it through. So I'm just gonna be myself. And Josh was like, dude, you are helping me. Yeah. I was like, and dude, when he said that, like when he said, dude, you're helping me, like that was like energy.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So man, we made a pact right there, like to find creative ways to do business. That was the first time that we really did business with Galtway and the marketing team, you know, on the marketing side of it. And just trying to be creative. You know, my mother would ask me, you know, what can I pray for around that time? And I was like, pray for creativity. You know, because what we're, and that's why I said, you know, the emphasis on the F word, like we would try anything, you know, to get a result.
Well, you're just trying to, at that point, everyone was trying to do what you were doing. Mm-hmm. So you had to do something to sort of shock the system, right?
And exactly.
That definitely would do that.
Exactly. You know, I had friends, you know, calling me, and I'd see them, you know, they're probably worried about me is what I thought. And I was like, they should worry about themselves. Yeah, really, you know, like, and I just like put my nose down, and it's not just me, you know, I have a whole team behind me, But just my mental attitude was like, I'm going to show no fear and just try to close deals, you know, and that's what we did. I mean, it was the craziest year of my life. And then really in 18 months later, we sold. So it was just a total flip.
It's crazy to think too. I would imagine you've looked back at this, just how much that all of the effort in 2020 probably set you up for that 18-month following exit.
It absolutely did. 100% it did. You know, I was just a different person. And then in 2020, you know, we started going out and doing more shows, doing more speeches. And ultimately, that's how we met, you know, our buyer and who we work for now. So it absolutely set that up.
At what point were you guys looking at, like, when you guys first started, you know, structuring the company and everything, did you look at, like, okay, here's the timeline, here's when we would like to exit? Or was that like, okay, that will present itself organically?
You know, I don't think any of us thought that it would take that long. It's not a long time, but, you know, I think we thought we'd have it done in, like, 3 years, which is just ridiculous. You know, we had no idea. But, yeah, I mean, I think we had that in mind, you know, maybe a 3 to 5 year turn, but that was just us being, you know, beginning.
That was you being yourself.
Underestimating the challenge for sure.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think we thought maybe 3 to 5 years. I would have never thought 10 years. Like, had you told me that when we were, you know, getting that funding and really getting it kicked off, I would have, you know, 10 years seems so far away mm-hmm. when you're looking towards it. But then looking back, you see how quickly it really goes. But no, the answer to your question is none of us thought it would take that long for sure.
But there was no like, okay, we're going to build it, and at this point is the time to start looking to seriously exit.
Yeah, no, we definitely had an EBITDA number that we were trying to hit for sure.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So you get through COVID, you learn a tremendous amount, and also you kind of learn the value of, like you said, candor, learn mm-hmm. the value of sometimes just say what you need to say.
Right.
And whatever shakes out from that is just what shakes out.
Right.
And we move on from that. Mm-hmm. And I think that serves. I know that the older I've gotten and the longer I've gotten in my career, the more comfortable I've gotten doing that. Mm-hmm. When I was younger,
right,
I was a little more hesitant to sure. do that just because I'm like, oh man, I don't want to say something in that long term.
That's right.
Myself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So as you get older and more successful, it becomes easier to be that.
It does.
Or in the case of 2020, not desperation, but something like that.
True desperation
makes you like, okay, well, it doesn't matter what I say now. It's right. either going to work or not work.
That's right. Yeah, there's no time to waste.
Right, right. I have to go now.
Mm-hmm.
So you get through 2020, and like you said, you guys are starting to do a lot more like outward facing. Like, this is, you know, putting it out there. Like, this is what we do and who we are mm-hmm. and the things we can offer and the solutions that we have. And you met your eventual buyer mm-hmm. at, you said, at an event?
At one of these trade shows. And, you know, I'll step back for just a moment. You know, hydrogen, you know, hydrogen's a cryogen, right? And we're cryogenic people. You know, and the hydrogen market, you know, was maybe 1 to 2 trailers per year, you know, and it could cost over $1 million to design the trailer, just in the engineering cost.
Making it, just design it.
Yeah, so you got to, yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's not something that you want to sell two of. You know, so we had our customers, you know, we're payload and optimization people. We really are. You know, that's what we do. And that's how we're known. So, you know, these customers were saying, hey, you know, we want another supplier for these trailers. You know, do you guys want to get into it? So we had been getting asked by, you know, our key customers for years. And just essentially saying no. So I think it was around 2020 that we decided to invest in a hydrogen design for a liquid hydrogen transport trailer. So then kind of the political headwinds started to change, and you know, obviously this administration is big into green energy, and you know, green energy is a great idea, right? I mean, who doesn't want green energy? You know, and again, I was raised in the oil field. You know, I really was, It was when that market really started, people were getting behind that, and how they have all these green energy initiatives. And, you know, we made the choice to design that trailer, design our hydrogen trailer. And then it was just, the timing was perfect. You know, it really just flipped. And then, you know, there was just all the, not headwinds, but just, we had all the tailwinds, excuse mm-hmm. me, not a pilot.
And they shifted.
But they shifted. They really did. And that was really the biggest thing for us. That was what really set, you know, our company apart. There's really only about five companies in the world that can that build liquid hydrogen trailers, and they're all public, and we were the only private one,
which gave a certain amount of latitude to you guys in it terms did. Of the way that you could position yourselves in the market and
exactly.
those types of things. Probably really, really handy to have. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting, though. Like you said, that wasn't necessarily part of the core structure when you guys started. It's like, man, this is really expensive to do. You're only going to sell maybe a couple, two, three of these a year. Mm-hmm. You got to sell more than that to make it make sense. And in the past, you know, while this was still, you know, a transactional thing, you're still selling the trailer. It is a different thing. How did you guys get around, you know, how did you guys reconcile the, this isn't part of kind of how we viewed it going in, but this is somewhere we need to go?
Well, I mean, you know, it's my son Carter, he was like, you know, have you always thought, you know, did you always know that you'd be in the hydrogen business? I was like, no.
Never wanted to, sir.
No, yeah, exactly. Never wanted to. You know, I got into this business, you know, really when it was all about well services and nitrogen and that type of equipment. And just with the way, you know, we sell what sells, you know, that's what we design. We go after what is selling. So really the market just drove us to that, you know, and having that hydrogen, product, and, you know, we've since come out with more products, really allowed us to really pivot with that energy transition over the last 10 years, you know, going from well servicing, you know, primarily with LNG, to now with hydrogen. And really in the middle there, you had industrial gas, our industrial gas customers that really had wanted us to get into it and ultimately, were our first customers.
Yeah, that's great. It's one of those things where it's like, okay, this makes sense to do. Mm-hmm. But man, we just got to, it's a big spend. But ultimately what took you guys over,
level. Yep. Yeah. It really put us in another category. You know, there's other, we have competitors out there, you know, we have good competitors and good people at those companies. But not everybody can design and build a liquid hydrogen trailer. And, you know, it's, I always say that I have the easiest job in the world, which it's not true at all, but it is in the sense that, you know, we have the best designs, and it's not just designing them. You got to have the people that put it together. You know, that's, one of the biggest things, really, you know, and from, you know, guys that do the tubing, that put the valves in, you know, to, you know, our welders, right? I mean, the best salesperson at our company is really a collection of about 15 people that come together, to really put that product out there. So,
yeah, you're right. And I mean, that's because one failure and it's over. Mm-hmm. And so it needs to be absolutely tight every single time.
Right.
It's not like you guys just shifted straight to hydrogen. You still had the other product lines.
Yep.
That you could,
yep. You know, still have all of our legacy products. Yep.
You know, you could bring those to bear. And so I don't know if the other competitors out there that they have those types of offerings, but it does, if they don't, it uniquely positions you to like, hey, we can do a few things for you here, kind of thing.
Well, and really over the last 10 years, the competition has completely changed. You know, there's been a lot of mergers and acquisitions, not just with us, you know, but, you know, the key players when we first started, you know, aren't really the key players now, you know, so that was also pretty interesting.
So you guys, you're at a trade show, and how does that conversation even start, for like, hey, we want to maybe buy you guys?
So we just met the guys there, you know, and it was, really months later, and it was really a text. From my good friend, Brent Kosky.
You get a text.
Yeah, I get a text asking, you know, about some financial numbers. So, of course, I'm like, you know, I'm getting a text from Brent. What should I say?
Yeah. And, hey, is this real? Is this? Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of how it opened. So the company that acquired us, and, you know, great, great group of people there. You know, there are no two cultures are alike, you know, but very similar cultures. You know, they're very entrepreneurial minded, just like we were. And, Brent Kosky, you know, he owned a company called United Hydrogen, which was the only privately owned hydrogen, liquid hydrogen company, I think definitely in the country, if not the world or the universe. But so they had just bought his company, and, you know, by far like the biggest customer out there. So, you know, Bob was always like, why the hell don't we know more? So I would start coming in on Saturdays just to like do research on the company itself, trying to get to know them and kind of who they were
already a customer of you guys.
We were trying to make them a customer.
I got you.
Absolutely. And, So Brent Kosky comes in and comes to visit us, and he's like, "I'm in town. I'm in town this week. If you want to have a, you know, breakfast on Friday or get a coffee, you know, let me know." And we had another customer kind of pop in on us that week that really just threw off my schedule completely. And you know, I ended up taking him out on Thursday night, and I'm driving to work on Friday, and I'm like, you know, I cannot believe that I did not set that breakfast up with Brent. You know, and I'm like, it's not too late. Text him. You know, so I texted him, and you know, I knew that he was leaving at around 11:30, and he texts me, and he's like, "Yeah, you know, I'm at the Marriott Bonvoy," and I'm like, "Okay, where's the Marriott?" So I look it up, and there's two. And by the way, that's a program that the Marriott has. It's not the name of a hotel. I've since learned, but I'm like, "Okay, Marriott Bonvoy, yeah. Where the hell's the Bonvoy?"
That's a rewards program.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now I know. Yeah. And so there's two of these. There's one in Kima, and then there's one in the Woodlands. And I'm like, well, if I'm, and I'm trying to figure out which one it is, but he's not getting back to me.
Probably going to be the Woodlands.
Well, yeah, that's what I thought. But I'm like, it'll be in Kima. So I start to pull out, and he texts me back, and he's like, it's the Woodlands. So I completely redirect, don't take one wrong turn, doesn't slow me down at all. And, you know, the GPS says I'll be there like 3 minutes early, and I'm like, that's plenty of time. I'll make up time. So I'm driving there and kind of getting my thoughts together. And the Woodlands, you know, there's trees everywhere. You know, like you can't see around the corner. So I can't find this damn Marriott. So I'm like, you know, screw it. I'm gonna find it on foot. So I park my truck. I get out, and I'm just like running around like a crazy guy. Like, where's the Marriott Bonvoy? Where's the Marriott Bonvoy? And I'm running like, up.
Oh, look at that guy.
Exactly.
Sad what happens these days.
Town's really going to hell.
Yeah.
And I see it, and I'm running up this hill, and I'm literally running with the quotes, you know, the quote in my hand, and I'm looking at my reflection, and I'm like, I'm going to be telling this story to my kids that I literally ran uphill to make this sale. And he said that he was going to be by the front desk next to the Starbucks. And I walk in, I see the Starbucks, and I see the front desk, and I don't see anybody that looks like Brent. And I'm walking around, and he calls me, and it's like 11:07. I don't know, I'm kind of weirdly telling the minute by minute here, but I'll never forget it. And he says, "Where are you?" And I'm like, "Man, I think I'm at the wrong hotel." And he goes, "Well, how the hell did you do that?" And I'm like, I don't know. I plugged into the GPS, and it just worked out this way. I'll be there in 5 minutes. And I hung up the phone, and I walk out to the valet, and I'm like, "Do you know, is there another Marriott around here?" And he goes, "I don't know." And I'm like, God damn it. And I literally start to run in a circle, and about halfway through the circle, I'm like, somebody here knows if there's another Marriott. So I come back to the valet, it's a different guy. And I'm like, is there another Marriott Bonvoy here?
You're just defaulting to action at this point.
Just reacting.
Do something.
I got to do something. Yeah. And I better be running.
Yeah. And, I better be running. I don't know where I'm going, but I'm running.
Because he's leaving at 11:30.
Right. That's right.
I don't know if I get till that point. And he goes, "Yeah, that hotel right behind you." And I look behind me, and, the more I tell the story, the further the hotel gets away. But I mean, this thing, it looked like a mile away. So I just start running as fast as I can. And I mean, I'm running as fast as I can.
It's a good thing that you're a long distance runner by trade.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very, very, pretty good runner. And I'm running through like school, you know, groups of children, like on field trips, running past old people. And about 20 yards before I get to the hotel, I'm like, okay, I got to slow down so I can catch my breath. And I walk in there, and I'm just sweaty. I'm breathing hard. And I'm like, where's the Starbucks? And I walk over, and I see him. And it's 11:13. And he gets up, and I shake his hand. And I go, I was not going to miss this meeting. And we sit down, and, you know, looking back on it, within the first 8 minutes, he says he's going to buy the trailer. So we actually had 10 minutes just to talk.
Oh, wow.
And that's how we became that's how Plug Power became our customer.
So now you've onboarded Plug Power. How long after that was the conversation around the financials and, you know, the beginning phase of, you know, from the, you know, the Ferris Bueller dash through the Woodlands to get the thing now, hey, let's start having a conversation around maybe exiting this thing.
4 months.
Wow. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I bet that felt like no time.
It did. Yeah. And then it took about like 3 months to actually get it all closed, and they were just the most stressful 3 months of our lives. But it really did all happen so quickly.
Man, glad it happened though.
Me too. It's 2 years ago, almost to the day.
Has it been that long?
It has.
That's awesome, man. And so now what? Now you're working for them still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, working for them, loving it. And I mean, just kind of doing the same thing I was doing, but on a much larger scale.
That's awesome. So yeah. Rather than, hey man, I've done the almost impossible, and I'm gonna take a breather. I'm gonna go ahead and take a bigger job.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely never considered how hard I'd be working after the sale. In many ways, I'm working harder than I did pre-acquisition, but you know, they've got big goals, and you know, I love being a part of it.
That's awesome. And you know, in some ways, I'm sure it still feels like those goals, they don't acquire you because the goals aren't aligned. Mm-hmm. And so they're still probably similar to the goals you guys always had.
They are.
And so it, in a lot of ways, probably still feels like the same thing.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it really does. But just like I said, on a much larger scale, you know, we were pretty much solely focused on North America and a little bit of South America. You know, now we're, you know, looking at South Korea and Europe, and that's an exciting opportunity there as well.
Oh man, absolutely. So of course you have to visit those places.
Yeah,
you got to see them
eventually.
Yeah, eventually. That's right. And right now probably not the best time to travel. In fact, I think they said don't, as Americans, stay in America.
We'll be shipping some equipment there early next year, so that'll be the right time to head over.
I think so. It sounds about right. And so now what do you do? Do you still have that itch to continue to maybe be an entrepreneur, or do you think, hey man, that worked, so I think I'm good?
No, I definitely have that itch. You know, I don't know if I could ever do what we just did. You know, I wouldn't trade that experience for anything. But it's hard to know. It's hard for me to actually say that I would have the amount of energy required to do what we just did. But you know, at the same time, it would be different. You know, sure. I don't know if it would be that hard. So no, I'm just trying to you know, finish on a strong footing with these guys, and you know, who knows, you know, I might stay there indefinitely. Right now, just trying to make sure that they feel like they got a good deal. That's very important to me. And then, you know, I'm still working with all the same people that I've been working with the last, you know, 11 or 12 years. So, I'm still loving what I'm doing, and, you know, I'll do it until I don't.
Man, that's awesome. Well, I mean, your story is amazing. It's one of those things where, again, I think, you know, going back, one of the highlights for me in the story is just the transition of like, yeah, I'm going to be just absolutely straightforward with what I need out of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, there were times in my career where, like I said, as I've gotten older and done that, I thought, man, I wish I'd have done that when I was younger.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I think it would have been received, if done properly, I think it would have been received fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it was done they understood the heart behind what I was saying. But now, as a, you know, I just turned 48 the other day. So now it's like, well, I mean, now I actually do know the answer, and people believe that I do. When, mm-hmm. And that makes you feel old, and that's okay. man, it's awesome to hear your story. Like I said, you and I have gotten to be around each other a little bit. You know, obviously just being associated with Josh, and then, you know, getting to be around you has always been cool. And to sit down and listen to kind of the extended, like, this is how, you know, all of that happened, and kind of where your brain was and all of that. It's awesome to hear, man. I really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate having me on. And, you know, it really is an amazing story, you know, full of a lot of amazing people, you know, and you don't do anything alone. That's for sure. You know, we've had good partners, you know, and we really have. I had good customers and good supporters. I love it, man. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And man, if there's anything I can do for you, man, let me know.
Likewise.
I appreciate you being on.
Thanks, buddy.
All right.